Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt on Podcast One.
Hello, everyone. This is Mike.
And this is Gibby.
And we're the hosts of the True Crime All the Time Unsolved podcast. If you haven't already, we'd love to invite you to come check us out. You can listen to True Crime All the Time Unsolved now on Podcast One, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know you want to.
This is Corolla Digital. This is Reasonable Doubt with your hosts, Mark Garagus and Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice, but I'm going to get it on. And welcome to the best hour or so in the universe. It's Reasonable Doubt. I'm Adam Carolla. That's Mark Garagus over there. Where's Mark at? Where are you at, Mark?
I'm in Palm Springs, sitting in the office, going to get some sun today. But so far this morning has been a Zoom court day. I put on some swag, though, just for you. I wanted to go pink and dress up for you. I took the coat and the tie off.
Very Palm Springy of you.
Right?
Yeah,
right?
It's a very good,
so.
Very good look, and you armos tan up nicely, I must say.
We've got that skin that was over thousands of years being chased by Turks around the Mediterranean. We've developed a little bit of olive complexion.
So, what's on your mind today? Because there's a lot.
You know, I have a couple of things.
Yeah.
I mean, we can always talk Alec Baldwin. We'll get to that eventually. But a couple of things that were kind of interesting, I thought. I just read an article about the fact that emergency rooms across the country are inundated, overflowing, and care is slipping. And when I first saw the headline, I assumed it was COVID patients in unvaccinated areas, because that seems to be the line. And it turns out that it's not, that it's for non-COVID related maladies, that the emergency rooms in all different parts of the country this morning was being reported are overflowing, and that the healthcare workers are all saying they've never seen anything quite like it. I read some apocryphal stories about somebody who was sitting in his own wound juices stewing for 7 or 8 hours because there was no attendance there. And I'm wondering whether that, you know, there's a couple of different ways that you could try to analyze that. One is people have been delaying non-COVID related treatments for a year and a half, because, you know, most people, if you believe them, don't want to go to the hospital because they're afraid of getting COVID. And so that's one explanation, I suppose, for the data. Another explanation for the data is that at least in the article that I read, and I haven't dove into the data yet on it, but they talk about a lot of cardiac and blood clots and stroke people or people who are suffering from those maladies are now inundating hospitals, emergency rooms, and urgent care centers. And I wondered if you had thoughts on this, because I thought of you when I was reading it, because kind of the law of unintended consequences. I thought you might have the crystal brain might want to take a little bit of a view on this.
Well, I have two thoughts. One is there's an interesting theory that's not fully been vetted, but it is interesting. It's happening, I think, in Europe, maybe in England, and there's some other studies of overall deaths being higher. Now, not overall because of COVID, but just, you know, for the sake of argument, in England on any given year, maybe there's 500,000 deaths or some number. I'm pulling that out of my ass. And then recently there's 700,000 deaths, but it's not, they've backed out the COVID and they're still having a higher death.
Which, if it's the same one I read, did you read where it was predominantly, or the spike was in people under 45?
I didn't see that part of it, but it's so what this suggests is that it may be caused, a percentage of it may be caused by people who were delaying treatments, but it also suggests that maybe the vaccine is causing some death rate, that it's causing it to tick up over and above its average thing. Now, this is kind of speculation, and some of the people like Alex Berenson and guys like that that sort of take deep dives on this are getting into. I think it's in his Substack somewhere, Gary, but he was kind of speculating as to why is the overall death higher, not counting COVID. What could be causing this excess death? And possibly did the vaccine have something to do with it in terms of people having a very adverse reaction to the vaccine? The other is the vaccine passport issue, which is, you know, interestingly enough, it seems like a high segment of our society who works in the healthcare field does not want to take the mandatory vaccine. Now, the news will tell you these guys are just sort of hillbilly Walmart shopping Trump fans. But the reality is when you look at some of the data out of New York, you know, New York is our biggest city, our biggest market, on the vanguard, progressive leadership. And who should know better and who's more educated than the folks that work in the healthcare industry, nurses and doctors and EMTs and things like that? This seems like this segment of vaccination, or the percentage of vaccination for the people who work in that industry in New York, is low, or at least relatively low, which kind of makes you wonder, what do these people know? It's not that they don't know medicine, and it's not that they don't know vaccines. They're making a decision. Now, that decision for those people is, I've been exposed to COVID. I had COVID. I must have had COVID. I've been doing this without a vaccine for a year and a half. I'm still here. I don't want this vaccine mandate forced on me. And as Dr. Drew says, you know, when we talk about hospitals overcrowding, you know, hospitals are a business. They don't make any money when they have a whole bunch of nurses working there and a whole bunch of doctors working there and a couple of beds filled. They sort of work on that interesting dance that, you know, from being a restaurateur, you kind of need to have the right amount of staff for the right amount of patrons in order to do that delicate dance of profit, you know. So if 10%, 20%, or 30% of the nurses, the emergency room doctors, or the whoever's who work at the hospital say, I'm not coming in with this vaccine mandate, it's going to throw off the ratio quite significantly.
You know, I remember having this discussion before the vaccines were kind of rolled out with a number of doctors, and I won't name them because nowadays you get canceled or shamed if you espouse any kind of rational thought. But the doctors, and I'm not talking run-of-the-mill people, I'm talking very, very people who have been chiefs of staff of major hospitals, people who have been around for practicing medicine for 30, 40, 50 years. And before the vaccines were rolled out, they were expressing misgivings because they could remember previous vaccines that had consequences that were unintended and side effects that were not known. And many of them, if not all, privately told me that they were not going to do it until they saw 6 months, 8 months, a year's worth of either data or application in the field, because they were afraid that you just couldn't, on a rushed basis, on an emergency basis, see or replicate what long-term side effects are. And I know this is almost blasphemous to even talk about this, but that's interesting to me, just because being somebody who has actually cross-examined the chief medical officers of in fact, I did it on Pfizer many years ago. And some of the stuff that I've seen personally in a courtroom in terms of how they characterize adverse events and what is dangerous and what is not dangerous leads me to believe that you may not always get what you are being told, at least initially, until somewhere down the road you see what happens when it's in the real world situation. And it's also a time has to elapse. I mean, that's the problem with these kinds of things that you're putting into your body.
Well, one of the members, I think, of the CDC, you guys can tell me if you've heard this recently, but one of the members sort of didn't help their cause when they said, look, the only way we're going to find out whether this thing is safe for 5 to 12-year-olds is to get them vaccinated, which was sort of like the Nancy Pelosi thing, which is like, we got to pass Obamacare so we can find out what's in it. It's not logical, and I think it would scare the average person if they said, oh, look, we have to get a whole bunch of kids vaccinated so we can find out if this thing is effective and safe. That's not what your average mom wants to hear.
Plus, the calculation that you do on the cost-benefit analysis, if you're in your 60s, 70s, or 80s, you're on the chapter 3 of your life. And I think that's a different calculation for people. It reminds me of the calculation that men do when they get prostate cancer in their 60s or 70s. Having gone through that with loved ones, there is a calculation that doctors do depending on what your age is and how aggressive the prostate cancer is, whether they do intervene or whether they monitor it and say, the likelihood, depending on your health, of you dying from something else is more likely. So that's something that has been around for decades, that kind of calculation. I don't know that you could ever make that kind of calculation when you're talking 5 to 12-year-olds.
Yeah. And look, I think for a lot of people, once they get the actual data, they realize that the risk of the young person dying of COVID is almost nothing. I mean, statistically zero. And the risk of getting a vaccine is statistically about zero too, but it's unknown. And so I think what a lot of people are kind of running into, and maybe why the CDC and the government's having a difficult time with the 5 to 12-year-olds, is we already know the data on the risk of death for a 7-year-old. That's nil. That's almost nothing statistically. Now, as far as getting the vaccine, that may be statistically nothing as well, but we don't know that number versus knowing this number. And maybe we will know that number in 6 months, but I think a lot of more prudent parents are saying, I'm just going to wait it out then versus be part of, I don't want to call the guinea pig thing, you know, it's not that dramatic, but why are you involving your child in any potential risk whatsoever of side effects or long-term whatever of anything if the alternative is statistically zero as far as death? Gary, did you find that Substack or that Alex Berenson thing?
I did, and it's, I believe he was talking about the Danes, so he's talking about the numbers in the Danish population.
The Danish population.
Yeah, and there's a lot here, but he's basically saying about how the Danes lifted everything and then immediately got a spike, almost exactly like the Israelis.
Lifted everything.
Yeah, they got to a vaccination point that they were happy with, and they lifted all coronavirus restrictions, and then it spiked through the roof.
Right.
No, it's going to be.
I'm trying to answer is the excess death one, where
I'm still looking for that. It looks like it's a different one.
It was I read it this morning, Gary. I'm trying to think where, but it was. I thought my takeaway was that there was a spike in under 45-year-olds, which I just thought. And then I read the other article about emergency rooms, and I'm waiting for somebody to try to put together an analysis of the data to see what the various suppositions or theories are.
Well, I do know that right now the lowest, you know, per 100,000 positive rate is Florida. So Florida is the lowest in the state right now. They who did nothing are the lowest. And, you know, I was thinking about
today. Actually, what he did, ironically, was what you and I were saying, I think, in the first month. Why aren't they going into the assisted living facilities and going into the senior kind of aggregate communities and doing something there, making sure they test there, making sure that they kind of close that down? And they were the first ones to get vaccinated because they've done the analysis that we were just talking about, the cost benefit. And that was, as opposed to poor Andrew Cuomo, who just got filed on yesterday, who was sending COVID patients into the senior homes and senior assisted living places.
Florida is the oldest per capita state in the union, technically the second oldest, but I think the first is like Maine or something. You know, it's a miniature place. So ostensibly they're the oldest larger state in the union, and they still have fared better than many of the other states that implemented a lot of lockdowns and a lot of mask mandates and everything. Gary, did you find something?
Yeah. At the end of this article, he says, Alex Berenson says, meanwhile, the Danes will probably load up on boosters for the oldsters and temporarily suppress per case death rate. But make no mistake, they are likely following Britain to the unhappy vaccine plateau with a huge number of cases and a COVID death rate that, although lower than the January 2021 peak, remains stubbornly high and a not insignificant contributor to the overall death rate, which itself is rising for reasons we don't know, but definitely has nothing to do with our population-wide experiment with a completely novel biotechnology rushed to market in less than a year.
All right. So you brought up Cuomo. There's the
hello, bud. I'm going to do one thing first. Podcast one.
Okay.
The Live by Live, the best podcast, including, I hope, they characterize us, because we think it's the best 15 to 1 hour in the universe. The latest news, curated music stations and playlists. Live by Live has all of your entertainment covered for guess how much? It's less than I spent for coffee this morning. Guess how much?
I'm going to guess $14 a month.
$3.99 a month.
What the hell?
$3.99. I mean, you could go turn your couch over. You could find that. Live by Live has the biggest live stream events too. Coming up on October 30th, wow, watch the iHeart Country Music Festival streaming exclusively on Live by Live. Go to livexlive.com/Adam, A-D-A-M. Get all this and more when you sign up for a free 7-day trial. What do you think of that?
Cannot beat it, even with a stick. Okay.
So I want to move into the other thing that caught my eye today. And interesting, because I talked to Gary right before we got in the air. So yesterday it was widely reported that the chief judge in the District of Columbia, a woman who's an Obama appointee, I believe, named
Beryl Howell,
and that Judge Howell excoriated, I don't think that's too strong a word, the Department of Justice for having an almost schizophrenic view of January 6th. And what she said was, and then we'll do a deep dive, something to the effect of the January 6th was originally by the prosecutors, whenever they were doing detention hearings or initial, you're trying to keep people in custody, were describing January 6th in almost apocalyptic terms, that this was the greatest threat to the democracy in anybody's lifetime. And judge, this is why you've got to keep people in custody. This is why they can't be released. This is a threat, blah, 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 which is accurate. Then she was sentencing somebody yesterday to a trespass. They had given this person a trespass, I believe. Gary will correct me if I'm wrong. But what she characterized as a petty offense. And she characterized it. She said, On one hand, and this is why she said it was schizophrenic of the government meaning the DOJ. She says, they come in here and they tell me, you got to keep this person locked up. This is the worst thing that's ever happened in the history of jurisprudence. And then you're giving them an offense that normally never even comes through my courtroom, meaning it's usually a $50 ticket and you're on your way, and it never sees the majesty of a federal district court. And so she was complaining about that. I would say that's a pretty amazing thing for a district court judge who's the chief judge in the District of Columbia to be telling the government. And there's a couple of ways that we can go on this, but I put that out there for the crystal brain analysis.
Well, I think obviously it became politicized immediately. And, you know, it's different than politicizing, you know, a football player taking a knee, because you go, well, that's sports related. And then people politicize it. You know, we politicize books and stand-up comedy routines, and, you know, we politicize everything. Well, this was sort of pre-politicized because it was a bunch of Trump people that were marching on the Capitol. But I think what the Democrats did is they went, we're going all in on this. And then the media joined them in that. Sometimes it ends up that way with Michael Brown and Ferguson. You know, everyone goes, we're going all in. We're going all in. And they go all in. And as the official particulars and a lot of the evidence and footage and testimony and things start trickling out, it really damages their all in case. You know, if they had sort of kept it to this was a riot, some of these people need to be prosecuted, this was out of control, I think as evidence trickled in, it would have supported that. The problem is they literally went to the, you know, greatest attack on our democracy since Pearl Harbor. Democracy was holding on by a thread. These were all white supremacists who had pre-planned this and then were, you know, weaponized by Trump. And as the evidence started to wash out, they couldn't find what supported their case. And there's two things you can do, as you know, when that happens. You can take your foot off the accelerator and kind of start trying to re-nuance the case, point it in a slightly different direction, or you can double down on your initial assertions, which makes you sound crazier as more of the stuff starts to come out. Is, you know, the FBI chimed in and said, we found little to no evidence that this was a white supremacy, you know, organized, pre-planned, premeditated. We didn't find evidence of that. And, you know, and you saw it with the Officer Sicknick, you know, it's like he was bludgeoned by a fire extinguisher, and then he was maced with bear spray, and, you know, he died, and then it went from, well, he died as results do, and then it kind of turned into him going into his office and having a stroke or heart attack or whatever it was. So they kept marching. Now, if you can find enough people in your galaxy who are with you, judges and beyond, then you can keep marching in this direction. If you run into people who are a little bit authentic and have some reason and some logic and who aren't going to drink the Kool-Aid like this judge, they're going to raise their hand and go, you guys keep saying this was an insurrection and the greatest, you know, attack on democracy ever. You're charging these people with trespassing and standing too close to monuments or parading on public ground or something. How does that comport with the greatest attack on American democracy? And she's just being authentic. I mean, she's being intellectually honest.
You know, there's another, and the reason I bring this up, Gary had mentioned, Gary, do you want to repeat what you had mentioned to me, and then I'll tell you what came to my mind when Gary mentioned this.
Sure. I was looking into a gentleman who most people probably saw a video of him standing in the streets on the night before the attack. He's wearing a red hat. He's in his 60s or so, and he's encouraging the crowd that tomorrow we have to go to the Capitol and you know, protect democracy. And in the most famous of these various videos of this gentleman, one guy who's standing pretty close to him just starts shouting, "You're fed! Fed!"
Well, first he goes, "No."
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he goes, "Come on, we gotta march into the Capitol tomorrow." And the crowd goes, "No." So that's not great evidence.
Jerry, if you can find this, I'd love, because I've got a theory here, and I may be a crackpot, but I'm going to posit this theory once you play it. And also, Gary, didn't you tell me that this guy was identified at one point?
Yeah, he was pretty quickly identified after the fifth. His name is Ray Epps. And what I'm going to play you guys here is actually a compilation. It includes that at the beginning, and then it's sort of the rest of what he did that day.
I should just let me set the table,
please.
If you watch MSNBC or CNN, you will know nothing of these stories. they don't exist, but. If you tune into Tucker Carlson on occasion, you will hear that he was talking about the feds putting in their own to agitate and to instigate the Gretchen Whitmer, kidnap story in Michigan is there's a lot of the same moving parts in that, a lot of similarities, which is, just to reiterate, if they want to, the government will say, "Hey, FBI agent, go down to this local mosque and get yourself a prayer towel and hang out, see if you can make some friends. And if you make some friends, start asking, hey, maybe we might blow up the Brooklyn Bridge and see if people join you. And if they join you, then we'll bust them and you'll be our inside guy." So there's a way of sort of, in a way, I guess you could kind of look at it as a bait car. We're going to take this car, we're going to put it in a bad neighborhood, and we're going to leave the keys in it. But we're going to...
Also, what they also do, remember, it doesn't even have to be an agent. I mean, there for years in Glendale, if you were busted for narcotics, they would bring you in and they would tell you, if you bring me... You do three deals and I make three busts on those deals. Nobody's ever going to see your arrest. That was just standard operating procedure.
Right.
So you then give somebody the greatest incentive in the world to go set up friends or acquaintances.
Right. And yes, I should be clear that these people weren't necessarily FBI agents, but they were people who were working in unison in concert with the FBI, much like some of the Gretchen Whitmore folks with the plot to kidnap. So they said, here's a big group of Trump fans, go in there, put on a MAGA hat and see if you can't agitate these people to do things that are illegal. And then when they do, we'll bust those people. So guys like Tucker Carlson, there's a handful of other guys, are aware of this and have been talking about it for a while. Now, this doesn't fit the narrative at all, but not one iota. So the folks on CNN go, "This is insane. I don't even know where you came up with this. This is all hearsay." But then you create a commission, and the marching orders of the commission is, we want full transparency. We want to look under every rock. We want to know every detail. We want to subpoena phone records of congresspeople. We want to know every facet of what led up to this riot and this insurrection. Well, the problem is these guys are part of that facet. Then it becomes a little bit damning when you somehow ignore these guys and move on to the guy who just came in from Iowa with his fat wife that afternoon and was walking around taking selfies in the rotunda, right? So now it then catches the radar of some of the people who thought this was going on in the first place. And they go, what about this guy? You didn't prosecute this guy, but there's a ton of footage of him agitating.
And he was on a most wanted list for about 6 months, and then he disappeared.
Right.
Right. That's, he got off the list.
And I have a theory after.
But we'll show that.
So just to reiterate, this is an edited version. It shows five different things. The first clip's at night on the 5th. Then he goes into the 6th. You'll hear some dings every time we're switching if you're just listening on audio. Okay. But here we go.
Tomorrow, we need to go into the Capitol. Into the Capitol.
What?
Tomorrow? I don't even like to say it because I'll be arrested.
Well, let's not say it.
I'll say it.
All right.
We need to go in.
Shut the fuck up, Boomer.
To the Capitol.
Monument Hill.
Our president is not speaking. We are going to the Capitol where our problems are. It's that direction. Please spread the word.
All right. No, okay, but one more thing.
Yeah, so can we go up there? No?
When we go in.
Are we going to get arrested if we go up there?
Yeah. You don't need to get shot.
Did you arrest us all?
He's standing right at the gates, the barriers. He's helping. He's not pushing through the barriers. He's just standing there watching everyone else push through the barriers. And it is missing the clip where it got cut.
Yeah, I'll find that.
It's floating around somewhere where he's like, we're going in, and they're going, no. And then they start calling him a Fed, which we used to yell.
Fed.
Back in the day, we used to yell NARC.
NARC, exactly. Right. Exactly. Very good. So I have a theory here.
I want to know. Let me tease it because it's a little confusing to me that he was on the FBI most wanted list and now he's off the FBI most wanted list. And, you know, you can say, well, maybe he never went into the actual Capitol or what have you. But these guys are casting a very wide net and they're going after anybody.
By the way, Charlie Manson never went inside the Tate
or LaBianca house. All right. Let me tell you guys about Fight Camp. Want to learn more about boxing or kickboxing from real fighters? Well, Fight Camp brings the boxing and kickboxing gym right to your home. Full body workouts you actually look forward to and a freestanding punching bag that can take your hardest hits. Made for beginners all the way up to experienced boxers. Learn from 6 highly qualified trainers. Comes with all the gear you need, including a freestanding punching bag, boxing gloves, quick hand wraps, and a punch tracking sensor that measures speed, volume, and output. Great for self-confidence, great for exercise, great for kids. No heavy weights, no spinning wheels. It is Fight Camp, right, Gary?
That is absolutely right. You can pay for your Fight Camp over 24 months for less than the cost of a boxing gym and get it right away. Plus, Fight Camp offers free shipping with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Just go to joinfightcamp.com/doubt. To get free shipping on Fight Camp, go to joinfightcamp.com/doubt. Joinfightcamp.com/doubt. And I have your clip here, Ace.
Oh, we'll play it.
I'm going to put it out there. I'm probably going to go to jail. Tomorrow, we need to go into the Capitol. Into the Capitol. Peacefully. Fed. Peacefully.
All right. So everyone yelled no when he said, let's go do it.
So what I wonder is, obviously that made its way around the internet. I don't know how many views it got, but it was substantial. And if you're a defense lawyer for somebody who has been charged in one of these cases, you're going to say to yourself, wait a second here. This guy is on the most wanted list. How come they haven't found him? Right, Gary? He was on the most wanted list for a period of time?
He was number 16 from January 8th to June 30th.
Okay, so you've got basically 6 months. So then all of a sudden, there's no, I haven't seen anything. Maybe we missed it, but I don't know that he was apprehended or arrested or anything. But all of a sudden, he's off the list. And I wonder if that some enterprising defense lawyer made a discovery demand, meaning a request of the government, to reveal whether or not this guy was working for the feds. Either he was undercover, or he was working off a beef, or he was a confidential informant, or made some other kind of request. And then all of a sudden, this guy goes off of the most wanted list, and we don't hear much about him. And all of a sudden, we're getting these Monty Hall, let's make a deal, plea bargains for people who the government had characterized as the most dangerous thing in the last century. The only other explanation that I can come up with right now, and maybe somebody smart and enterprising will come up with something else's, is they did apprehend him, and he immediately flipped or started cooperating, and that's why you haven't heard about it, because that's a possibility as well.
Well, a couple things. You know, first off, there's themes, and the themes need to be nurtured and fed and mostly fertilized. The one is most dangerous since Pearl Harbor. This was an insurrection. Our democracy was hanging on by thread. Again, a bunch of trespassing busts don't really feed or fertilize that. The other, remember this theme from Joe Biden and many others, which is domestic terrorism is the biggest fear we face as a nation. Well, if you are going to try to make the case for domestic terrorism being the biggest, the most dangerous act that we're seeing as a nation, if you're going to make a case for domestic terrorism, you have to then say, look no further than January 6th. But if January 6th starts falling apart, it hurts your domestic terrorism case as well. Although I guess domestic terrorism are now concerned parents showing up at school board meetings, so they've switched the narrative a little bit. But also, Merrick Garland was being grilled on this, and he was just sort of hiding behind the, you know, this is an ongoing case, I can't comment on it. And the senators or whoever were saying to him, we don't need you to comment on it, we just need you to answer the question. Were there FBI employees, informants, were they inserted into this crowd? And he's like, I can't talk about it. And they kept saying, we don't need any details. We just need to know if they were in there or not. And he couldn't talk about it, which kind of suggests that they were, because if the answer was no, then the answer would be no. If there were no FBI informant / guys who need to work off a debt inserted into this group, then when you ask Merrick Garland about it, he'd go, no, we don't do that. Or not to my knowledge. This is the first I've heard of it. But he didn't say that. He just went, it's ongoing, can't talk about it.
Well, he's taken up the mantle of Supreme Court justices when they say they can't comment on Roe versus Wade because, you know, that case may be coming before me. I mean, it's such a shirking of kind of the duty, the oversight duty of Congress. And I don't know why they don't just insist on an answer. I mean,
how can you insist on an answer if he just keeps...
You could just, you know, kind of like what we do in a courtroom. When somebody won't answer the question, objection, Your Honor, non-responsive, direct the witness to answer the question. Objection, Your Honor, non-responsive, meaning when you won't answer the question, you're directed to. I thought I turned on my do not disturb. Gary taught me how to do that. you know, that's a.
Well, so then the question is how did this guy get on the FBI most wanted list in the first place? Were they unaware of him? Why was he up there? You know, if they
I'll tell you something. I've got this situation right now. I'm dealing with this absolutely in real time as of today or as of this morning. I had a client, and I don't want to reveal who it is, who was working for one agency. And nobody would have ever in a million years guessed it. And I won't even describe how. But he's working for one agency and one jurisdiction. And then lo and behold, another jurisdiction comes in and executes warrants, search warrants, and other things for a completely separate, unrelated investigation, not knowing that the that a sister agency is doing an investigation. And that becomes a shit show of the greatest at the greatest levels. And I'm smack dab in the middle of it. And you should see the how the agency that was using the client has now turned their back and tried to just run away from what they were doing. So that's in real time. I've watched it. I've got a front row seat right now.
So the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing, and that's how he could have made it onto that list.
I will tell you, years ago, I wish I could write this story, but I can't. Years ago, one of the most prominent Republicans in the last 40 years was embroiled, I guess, for lack of a better term, in a pay-to-play scheme, and did not know that my client was working at that time for another agency of the U.S. government. And the prominent Republican was obviously, as he was embroiled in this, was protected, surrounded by another federal agency. And neither one knew what was happening at the time. And it was once again, a shit show of international proportions as to what was going on. And you would say to yourself, do these guys ever check with each other? Because I'm telling you, one of the 10 most prominent people in the world at the time involved with international leaders who were also, you know, front page news at the time. And these two, both federal agencies, had no idea that they were working at cross purposes.
Should we transition to Alec Baldwin?
Yeah, why not? Why not? Gary, can you set up the... I sent you an article today, which I thought was interesting. Do you
remember? Yeah, I thought it was interesting, too. It's basically the first statement by the armorer, who is sort of at the center of this controversy. She basically goes out of her way to say that she has no idea how any live ammunition got onto the set, and that all the guns were fully secured during the nighttime and during lunchtime, but also she did not have enough time to do her job because she had two jobs. So it's a little bit of a weird thing where she's kind of trying to say that nothing was done wrong, but I was also spread too thin.
And let me tell you, and I've said this from the get-go, Alec Baldwin, the actor, if you could somehow separate him from being a producer, I don't think there's any liability. He's part of the chain of horrific events that unfolded. But by all accounts, at least as what's been reported, and I always say that as a caveat, the actor doesn't have, to my mind, if I'm repping him, I would tell him, look, if it was just you as the actor, I don't even know that you need me. I'll hold your hand through this. However, Alec Baldwin, the producer, has potential exposure here. I'm not saying he should be filed on. I'm not saying any of that. I'm just telling you from a prosecutorial standpoint, they've got people, apparently tons of them, who are saying that they were cutting corners, they were being cheap. People walked off the job. They were combining two jobs into one, and they didn't want to pay what is being reported. These are the facts that I can see a prosecutor using, that they didn't want to pay for somebody, and they've got a witness who says, I didn't take this job. It was an accident looking for a place to happen. He was an experienced guy. They picked somebody that's a so-called rookie. And by the way, she is lawyered up, and appropriately so, because it looks like they're trying to hang her out to dry, at least internally. And if your motivation is to cut costs or to not spend what you should for safety, that's a prosecutor's wet dream. That is something a prosecutor is going to say that informs the depraved mindset of somebody, which gives me the basis for an involuntary manslaughter.
Well, a couple thoughts. One is, you know, wait till discovery, because inevitably they always find a couple of emails that say, you know, this armory guy, he's seasoned, he's the veteran, he's the best, but he needs $1,200 a day. And then somebody writes back, that's way too much. Find me somebody cheaper. And then somebody writes back and says, we can't find someone, you know, with that kind of experience at that price. And then they go, you know, 400's the max per day. You know, there's always going to be some of it'll be real and some of it'll be just be the kind of shit you do in business every day. But there's still going to be the aha, you know, someone will get it and go, some prosecutor will get it and go, oh, this looks pretty damning. Even if it's not, it's sort of the equivalent to, you know, we found the wife in the bathtub and then somebody says, you know, 6 months earlier, I heard them arguing while they were out to dinner. And it's like, that's neither here nor there. But for the prosecution, it is aha.
Aha. Exactly.
So there's going to be some of those ahas because it's impossible to put on a production this size and not have some texts or some emails talking about price or experience or what have you. The other part is, you know, prosecutors, you know, they are great publicists for themselves. And if, the producer's Joe Finkelstein, no one's heard of him. But they can really make a name for themselves by going after a name. We've seen this time and time again. So Baldwin has a pretty big target on his back because everyone knows the name. And it'd be a nice feather in the cap of the prosecutor to haul him into court. So I got to believe there's even more incentive. You know more about prosecutors than I do, but what little I know, they like the limelight and they like the high profile, and you getting some producer no one's heard of doesn't give you that cachet.
And look, there the kind of web that is going on here, there is an orchestrated, I don't want to call it campaign, but this woman who is 24 years old, and I apologize for not knowing her name, the focus has been towards her.
Her name is Hannah Gutierrez Reed.
She's the one who's lawyered up.
Correct.
And people are kind of, there is a whisper campaign towards her. You then have the assistant director who is being kind of, he's also getting the kind of the cold shoulder treatment and the, you know, we're going to lay the blame here. Because I'm telling you right now, somebody is going to get filed on. There is just, the mother of the prosecutor has not been born who's not going to file on this case. And I don't say that in a derogatory way, because by all accounts, this prosecutor here in New Mexico, I've looked at her background and she's fairly new to the job, and she's made some tough decisions in the since she's been on the job. She's there's one case in particular, I'll talk about it the next show, but there's one case in particular where she took an unpopular position because she thought it was right. And so I get that. But at the same time, once you have, if it's true, 500 to 600 rounds of live ammo on a set, somebody's going to pay the price for that. You don't have the needless death of somebody and 500 to 600 live rounds, which nobody that I've seen so far has given a justification for why that's there, and not have somebody held accountable in a criminal setting.
All right, let me hit a spot and then we'll get to the Rittenhouse case, which is dividing the nation. First, I'll tell you about NordVPN. Like a cyber Swiss Army knife. Access content from over 59 different countries by changing your virtual location with one click. So while Mark is in Bosnia defending war crimes, he can still get Netflix. And Gary, I know you've been using the bejesus out of your NordVPN.
Yeah, I use it on all my stuff. It's great just for security when you're putting in credit card numbers and stuff. But also, like you said, if you set your location to London, you're going to get a whole different suite of Netflix stuff. So you can find some really cool shows that are available other places.
You can put NordVPN on up to 6 devices. It's the cost of a cup of coffee every month for premium cybersecurity and security and access to vast amounts of content, plus a no-risk 30-day money-back guarantee if NordVPN isn't for you. So go to nordvpn.com/doubt or use doubt for 73% off a 2-year plan, plus 4 bonus months free. It's quick. You got to go quick. This is a limited time offer. So last but not least,
I'm Rittenhouse. So happy you brought this up, because it's another reason that my side of the aisle drives me crazy as to what's happened in the last 5-10 years. You know, we talked earlier today about you won't see this story on MSNBC or CNN. And part of the reason for that is there's been this monumental change in the last 25 years of the left, where I grew up, kind of being questioning and being critical of law enforcement. One of the reasons I became a criminal defense lawyer is because I wanted to hold the government's feet to the fire when they come after somebody. And I always thought that that was part of the role, not only of criminal defense lawyers, but of journalists. You know what I mean? I mean, that was kind of what you did. It was noble. It was what, it may not be popular, but that's what you did. At some point in the last 25 years, the left has become a cheerleader for the prosecution, and the right has been the one who is at least critical or questioning or not subservient to the party line. And this is a perfect example of what I'm talking about. The judge in the Rittenhouse case, who's been a judge, or at least in the criminal justice system, for decades, if not 40 years.
He has been a judge for over 40 years.
Okay. He looks good for being a judge.
He really does.
Years. Yeah, doesn't he? I mean, that's pretty impressive, unless he was appointed in his teenage years or elected. So the defense did what good defense lawyers do. They said, judge, we're going to do a motion in limine, which says a motion in limine is before the trial. We want to, everybody's going to throw out kind of request for evidentiary rulings that the other side can't do certain things. And so what the defense says, we don't want the prosecution getting up here and talking about victims, using the word victim. They can call them complaining witnesses. They can call them the person who was shot or the person who died or whatever. And the judge said, I agree. That's always been kind of a problem for me. And I've said this since before I was a lawyer. Victim has a connotation that you've already prejudged that person has no culpability, that person has a legal definition of being a victim. And therefore, my client, who is charged with the crime, is already behind the eight ball. Makes sense?
Yeah. If the person who was shot and killed is labeled a victim, then by virtue of that math, the person that shot them is a perpetrator.
And not only the perpetrator, but you're culpable. You're
right.
If somebody is a victim, then that means somebody is culpable. So right. You've taken part of the factual determination that is the jury's province. You've taken that out. You've given the prosecution a head start. And that should not be the case. And I will tell you, my father, in an unpublished opinion many years ago, with a DA who then became a judge who unfortunately has passed away, she kept screaming victim, screaming victim, screaming victim. Unpublished opinion, the Court of Appeal reversed, said no go. This judge said, hey, I just got reversed 2 years ago, 3 years ago, whatever it was, for allowing in a letter from the deceased. And the Court of Appeal said, I never should have done that, because that letter from the deceased could not be cross-examined. It was the definition of hearsay. Says, I'm not going to let that happen again. You can't call this person a victim. Come up with a different name. And the defense, if you can prove that they were engaged in arson or looting or rioting, you can call them that in argument at the end of the case.
Let me set the table quickly. Kyle Rittenhouse,
17-year-old at the time from Illinois, travels to Kenosha, Wisconsin.
Right,
to,
brings a gun. To,
it's unclear if he brought it or if somebody gave it to him when he got there.
Well, had a rifle.
Yes, he had an AR.
Was there, he said, to help protect somebody's businesses. Also brought his first aid kit. He was going to administer first aid, which maybe he did do. There's videotape of it. At some point, I don't know why, but someone started chasing him down, even though he had a weapon, and he fired on the person that was chasing him down. He killed the person. Then later on, he was sort of running for his life.
Yeah, he was trying to run away. And
trying to get behind the sort of police line, and somebody sort of tackled him and was going at him with a skateboard, and he, off the ground, fired and killed that guy. Look, once again...
And then a third guy came in with a pistol, and he shot that guy in the arm. That's the guy who lived.
Right. And I know CNN would like a version of this that fits the narrative. Unfortunately, this ain't it. This is not that narrative. There's too much footage of it.
It's astonishing to me that we have rushed to... I mean, in the face of the footage, in the face of what normally in the cable news, axis of evil that all criminal defendants face, it's amazing to me that this is the narrative that has been put out there.
Well, the narrative is, he's white, he's a gun owner, or at least carries a gun, and he's white. He's going in there to shoot innocent people who are protesting, the death of unarmed black men at the hands of white police officers. That's the theme. But at some point, you have to look at the videotape and go, this one's not going to make the cut in terms of the narrative. But they never do. They just push forward. I mean, maybe it's a theme of reasonable doubt this week, but it sort of has a lot of similarities with an insurrection versus a riot. Fellas, this isn't an insurrection. You got to drop the theme. Just go down to riot at this point, or nuance it a little bit. And I know you have the theme for Kyle Rittenhouse. It's not fitting the theme. You have to reverse it.
By the way, let me throw another Molotov, intellectual Molotov cocktail into the mix. Everybody who said, why is George Floyd's killing, which is on tape, and Derek Chauvin's prosecution, why are we even going to trial? I mean, that was kind of a Twitter theme, The tape speaks for itself. Do you remember this?
Sure, sure.
Yeah. So if that's the case, well, if the videotape is conclusive, meaning we don't need to see any more, what happened here?
Right. Why don't the same rules apply? Well,
I explain that to you. And by the way, I'm the lefty. What do they call me on our comments, Gary? Lefty Learjet liberal.
that's right.
I'm lefty Learjet liberal. But hello, whatever happened to just consistency?
Well, we're up against it here, but prediction for this case.
I'm going to tell you, as I always say, and I don't mean this as a cop-out, it always comes down to jury selection. I'll tell you once they've got a jury what's going to happen in this case.
All right, Mark, I know you got to get to the cabana and fire up the blender. So
headed over to Gigi's that just opened last night. That's what that shirt is. It's a Gigi shirt.
You see this? Adam, I got one for you. Medium or large?
I'll go large. God bless you, my friend. We'll talk
to you, Mark. Thank you.
Last but not least, there's Geico. Do you own, do you rent your home? Will you do one or the other? And then there's your automotive policy. How about you combine those two with Geico? Geico makes it easy for you to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your automotive policy. It's a good thing too, because you already have so much to do around the house. So what do? Well, you go to geico.com, you get a quote, and you see just how much you could save and how easy it is to save when you go with Geico. Geico makes it easy. Visit geico.com today. That is geico.com today. All right, let's see. I'll be in Baltimore at Magoobies. That'll be November 5th, so you can come on out and say hi there. Although that show's almost sold out. I got to check into that. But I'll be in Pennsylvania, right outside of Philly, at the Keswick Theater. Got some tickets available for that. That'll be on the 6th. You go to adamcarolla.com for all the live shows, and you can check out our Chassis channel at on Pluto TV 687 for a bunch of good free content. Go watch Adam Carolla Goes Racing. Until next time, this is Adam Carolla for Mark Garagos saying mahalo.
Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt. Tune in next Saturday for an all-new episode. This is Carolla Digital.
Geico, do you own, do you rent your home? Well, you do one or the other. You work hard enough. How about you do a little bundle? Bundle with Geico. Make it easy to bundle the homeowners and renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you got enough to do. You're busy these days. Save a bunch of money. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save when you visit geico.com and get to bundling. RockAuto.com. Why spend 30 to 50%, even 100% more for the same parts that a chain store or dealership might have? Why spend so much there? Why not go to RockAuto.com? It's a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers, everything from engine control modules to brakes to motor oil, even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic car or your daily driver, get everything you need in a few clicks delivered direct to your door. Go to rockauto.com. See all the parts available for your car or your truck. Write "doubt" in the "how did you hear about us" box so they know we sent you. An amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com.